Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Jennifer Corning, and we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. South of Sheridan, Wyoming, about 20 minutes, then drive through the classic Three Timber Ranch entrance along Little Goose Creek, and you'll find yourself at the historic Quarter Circle A Ranch and the Brinton Museum. The museum sits on the 620-acre ranch just a couple miles southwest of Bighorn, Wyoming. In 1928, the ranch was purchased by Illinois businessman Bradford Brinton as a gentleman's ranch to accommodate his hunting trophies and art collection. Bradford was a patron and avid collector of American Indian artwork and artifacts and many of the most celebrated 19th and 20th century Western artists. Almost 100 years later, the Brinton Museum can boast one of the most significant and extensive Western and American Indian art collections in the Rocky Mountain West.
Today we welcome Kendra Heimbach, the museum's executive director, and Jochen Vurich, curatorial director. I am delighted to be at the Bradford Brinton Museum, and we welcome both of you. This property was purchased 100 years ago by Bradford Brinton, and after extensive renovation of the property and expanding his art collection, he actually died 13 years later. I'm really curious, how and why was the legacy of this property and the collection maintained these many years?
So Bradford, he had a great relationship with his sister Helen, and it was an agreement between Helen and Brad that whoever outlived the other would maintain this property, maintain the collections, and then at their passing, establish a trust or a memorial so that really the public could get a glimpse into their lifestyle here in the West and get to view the collections and the ranch property that they loved so much, and they wanted others to also have that opportunity. And so, yes, Bradford, he passed away rather young and after some complications following a surgery, and he left the property to his sister Helen. And Helen then, she maintained the property for about 25 more years. She did not live here year-round. She spent her summers out here in Bighorn on the Quarter Circle A. But she was very particular and proud to maintain these spaces, as her brother, I think, would have been happy with her efforts there. But we like to talk about Helen as the preservationist. So she maintained the ranch house very well, the art collections, collections of documents, books, but the grounds as well. And she made some little improvements here and there and put her own touch on the property. But it was in 1961 when Helen passed away and then created the Bradford Brinton Memorial.
For those that have not been here, the Brinton Museum is absolutely meticulously taken care of. Beautiful, beautiful landscaping right at the base of the mountains. But really, the Brinton Museum's art collection is legendary. What does the collection look like today?
I speak here as somebody who has been here on the job for 3-4 months. I knew about the Brinton before coming here as the curatorial director, and I knew about it because of the strength of its collection. I must say I didn't realize the depth of the collection. I knew about especially one artist by the name of Vinald Rice, who is represented here with maybe 30, 35 portraits, very special portraits of Blackfeet Indians that he produced. When he first came out west, he was a German-born artist. He lived in New York and always wanted to paint quote-unquote Indians. And so he finally had that opportunity coming to Montana. And then he he made these portraits that we have. It's the first series of portraits, and then he made many more in subsequent summer visits. It is, I think it's probably one of the most comprehensive and beautiful collections of Rice's portraits of Blackfeet Indians. The collection is deep. We have represented many of the kind of the big names in Western art, from Remington to Russell, and so forth. But again, I also think that there are things to discover here, artists that have strong roots in Wyoming. They may not have the name recognition of people like Russell or Remington, but Edward Borin and William Gollings are artists that were really part of that generation, and they created that kind of genre, if you want, of Western art. And then, of course, there is the Plains Indian collection, which is really fabulous. It's probably one of the best of its kind. I'm not a curator who specializes in Native American art, but I know enough that it is really special, really deep, historically really grounded, many artifacts date from a time when Native Americans were not on reservations, and they were still very much living the traditional life of buffalo hunting and so forth.
Kendra, we were talking earlier about the Native American collection, and I don't know a better collection anywhere. It's absolutely stunning. It's old pieces, some more contemporary pieces, pieces that were collected, were gifted. But you told me a fascinating story about your relationship with the tribe. Could you talk a little bit about the collection and its ongoing collection?
Yes, our Plains Indian collection really has its roots in Bradford's collection, Bradford Brinton's collection, and then additionally, the museum has added to its Native American collection through a relationship that we have with the Foundation for the Preservation of American Indian Art and Culture. So our neighbors of the Quarter Circle A Ranch, our historical neighbors, are the Gallatins. And Edith and Galette Gallatin, they lived here at the time of Bradford. They actually helped introduce Bradford to the West. And they were friends with the Northern Plains nations, the people that were moving through this space, camping along the creek, hunting. We're able to amass a collection of objects that were gifted to them through the relationships that they held with these people. And that collection was held and stored and taken care of very well. It eventually was gifted to the Foundation for the Preservation of American Indian Art and Culture. And that collection went out to Chicago for about 40 years. And then it returned to the Bighorn region in 2012. When we formed an American Indian Advisory Council with the help of Father Peter Powell, and he was at the time the president of that foundation. And so it was through that relationship that we were able to receive this collection into our museum's permanent collection. And that was really a great catalyst for us to develop relationships with the Native nations that are here in our region. And so through that American Indian Advisory Council, we have representatives that are from the Crow or Ipsalica tribe, Northern Cheyenne, the Lakota tribe, and then some other at-large representatives that represent different geographic areas. And they really do help us to care for, provide interpretation and guidance on how we are, how we're storing and providing safe keeping for these objects, but also how we can continue to engage with them today, and so that conversation is ongoing, and we can work with these advisors to help us to continue that dialogue and help people understand that these are people that have tremendous stories. They're here living today. And, what does that look like in today's contemporary society?
One of the pieces that you just received for exhibition maybe was 3 or 4 years ago from the Cheyenne tribe, the buffalo robe. And I think it's so fascinating that the tribe actually said, would you take this and show it for us? Because they didn't really have a facility and the capacity to share that information with the tribe, with the people at large. Tell us about that piece.
Yeah, so this is something we're very honored to be looked at as a partner and an institution that is worthy of helping to provide safekeeping and care for these really important historical objects. And so that particular item is a painted buffalo robe that was taken during the Dull Knife Battle. And it even has the name of the lieutenant that took that object from during that battle, and he stenciled his name and claimed that as his own property. But over time, thankfully, that robe made its way back into the hands of its owners, and the Northern Cheyenne people now have that robe. And when they were able to go pick this robe up and connect with the individual who had that piece. It's a fairly large robe. It's probably 10 feet by 12 feet. And so you would imagine storing something like that is quite difficult. And so the members of the team at the Tribal Historic Preservation Office contacted us and said, hey, would you help us out and could you store this? And we said, by all means, we would love to provide that assistance and partner with you in that way. And then eventually we asked for their permission if we could put that object on display in the museum, because it's got such value from a cultural preservation and educational standpoint. And so we were able to unveil that on the 147th, I believe, anniversary of the Dull Knife fight, and had elders and representatives of the tribe come and help to unveil that here with us in Bighorn. And it's just it's an honor and a privilege to get to do things like that.
One of the things that I appreciate about the exhibit is there's not a lot of explanation going on. These pieces are shown for their sheer beauty, the color. It's all glass. You can walk all the way around the pieces and see them. Now, you have an extensive gift shop with all kinds of books with information about it. But was that a curatorial, artistic choice to keep the text at a minimum and just let the work speak for itself?
Yes, actually, that exhibit was designed in coordination with Father Peter Powell and our American Indian Advisory Council. And as you walk into that space, there's a beautiful prayer that helps to center you as you come into that space, and to really view these objects as their art, but they're also, there's a sacred nature to them, and, you know, sacred in that they are just very special. And whatever kind of your relationship to spirituality, I think, can inform how you interact with these objects. But we do place that prayer as an invitation just to recognize the uniqueness and the sacredness of the art that's on display. And so, yes, the casework, the whole design was really just meant to minimize the distractions or anything that comes between you as the viewer and the objects themselves, and so that you can really just have kind of an intimate relationship with these objects. There's small text and it's low down low within the casework, and we worked with our council there so that we have the object name represented in English, but also the native language, and then some short descriptions. But if one really wants to learn more and have more of a kind of an educational, maybe instead of a spiritual experience with these objects, would be we do have handouts in the galleries. Our curatorial staff are very available and are willing to give some tours, especially as we have groups come in. And that's just a treat and a really wonderful way to engage in that space to learn a little bit more. And of course, visit the museum store for some additional reference material.
The Fitzgerald Theater is really a great space it's very adjacent to the gallery, to sit down and spend some time listening to Native Americans speaking about their culture and their history. So that film really brings you into the present in many ways, and makes that connection between the more sort of historic gallery and then these native voices that are speaking today.
Again, for any visitors that are coming to the Britain Museum, there is always the permanent collection of Western art and the native artifacts. But then you have another gallery, and this is the reason I love coming down here at least once or twice a summer. It's a changing exhibition gallery. I have been here to see incredible saddles. There was a saddle exhibit. I was here to see Ben Pease's show, contemporary Native American painter. How does the curatorial decision-making go for that temporary gallery?
So I'm still learning the institutional history. I know that we've done some fabulous exhibitions in the past. I'm assessing really the collection and trying to understand where the strength and weaknesses of the collection are, because my philosophy is to, whenever possible, to build those exhibitions also from the collection, or to connect those changing exhibitions with the collection. Sometimes not necessarily, because sometimes it's just really nice to bring in art from elsewhere that we don't have. But just to give you an idea, we have a photography collection, historic photography of the West. It's extensive. And many of the major photographers who kind of explored the West, you know, they came on these survey expeditions and so forth, they're all represented in this collection, and we've never done anything with it. So that is certainly one that I want to organize, and I think it could something that could travel. And I'm also still very new, but I'm really fascinated with the Battle of the Little Bighorn, which is not far from here. And when we were in the galleries, we looked at the wonderful muslin painting by Stephen Standing Bear. He painted that in 1890 or so, but he was at the battle, so. And there's other representations by Native Americans of the battle. I'd like to organize a small show around that. Anniversary, 150th anniversary is coming up. So there are plenty of ideas for exhibitions.
I might add one thing, too. The value of those rotating exhibition spaces, I think that, yeah, Jochen pointed out that there's opportunities to expand upon or augment what is our permanent collections, but it provides an opportunity for us to engage the public and bring different visitors who feel like, well, I've been to the museum, I've seen the permanent collections, but it's a wonderful opportunity for those folks who are living within the community or, you know, in surrounding communities like Billings to come pay a visit down to the museum regularly, a couple times a year, because it gives us an opportunity to highlight a lot of different voices and perspectives of Western art. And I love that we get to invite folks back into our space on a regular basis.
We have been talking about the museum, and I think we should talk a little bit about this building, this incredible building. The Forrest E. Mars Jr. building that houses the museum, has the five galleries, a bistro, and a museum store, is kind of a marvel unto itself. Describe the building and how it came about.
It is a fascinating and state-of-the-art facility that we're sitting in right now recording this interview. And it is a space that was really designed to disappear into the landscape. This building, how it came about was, I referenced the Gallatin collection earlier in the interview. We had an opportunity to bring that Gallatin collection to the Brinton Museum and kind of bring it back home, if you will, to the lands that a lot of those objects originated from. The Brinton Museum at that time did not have the space to display that collection or, you know, really store it in a museum-grade professional abilities. And so so we started dreaming about how to bring that collection here. And this building is the result of that dreaming process. And so, and because there was a large focus around the Native American collections, there was a lot of conversation and a lot of thought put into how we can really not disturb the landscape and the property, and to really have the design of the building really kind of in a sense match the nature of those collections. And so this building, I think they did the team at the time did a really good job doing that. And so it's literally built into the hillside. There's this beautiful rammed earth wall that kind of runs right through the center of this building. And they pulled material from our property to build that rammed earth wall. The geometry of it actually encompasses Moncrief Ridge, looking out one direction from the building, and then actually if you continue that circular curve around, it encompasses the Medicine Wheel up in the Bighorn Mountains. Just a lot of thought and intention put into how this building is in conversation with the landscape itself.
In addition to the Forest Mars building, which has the museum, this property includes a historic ranch house built in 1892, the Little Goose Creek Lodge, a saddle barn, milk house, leather workshop, and extensive gardens. Why has the entire ranch, almost a huge section of land, been maintained to this incredibly immaculate standard?
You know, That goes back to Helen Brinton. She set that standard, and in the formation of the museum through Helen Brinton's will, it was stipulated that we continue to preserve and maintain these spaces as they were in 1960. And you know, obviously there are things that change as times are changing, but we do really look to preserve and maintain that cultural history. And so we place a lot of value in maintaining these historic outbuildings, in maintaining the grounds, in to look immaculate. The treeway that lines the trees that line the drive as you come in, it's all part of this curated experience as you're coming to the museum.
Tell me a little bit more about the ranch house, because Bradford Brinton was well educated, and that collection and the house. For our listeners, you need to know that you can actually tour the house in addition to the museum. Tell us a little bit about his background, the history, and what they might experience in the house itself.
He was a highly educated gentleman, as you said, Yale educated, and like so many, you know, East Coast well-educated men, he also developed a fascination for the West and the rugged life. You know, this ranch represents, you know, a little bit of both, right? And it does tell a story about, you know, his generation and how these very educated people came from the East Coast and then started to, you know, create an identity here in the West as Westerners. So the ranch house has many different stories to tell, and the library itself is a treasure. Many other objects there that are fairly old and together make this kind of cultural treasure. Now, how do we tell the story? That's a whole another question, and I think that many historic homes, if you listen to what curators and educators are saying, is that they're also thinking about how can they make those stories relevant for audiences today. So there's a lot of good discussion going on. I think we need to always listen to that, to those new ideas, and think about how can we interpret that house in ways that people can really relate to it.
I find that particularly interesting because I work with the Bear Museum, and they have this beautiful museum. They have a gorgeous house. And the question that everyone asks after they've seen the collection, they want to know about the people. Mm. Who were these people? Why did they collect? What did they do? So those are opportunities, I think, for ongoing discussion about Who are the people in the West? Why did they come here? Why did they collect work? And really, how fortunate we are that they have opened their homes to us. We're at the Britain Museum, and I'm very interested, what is coming in 2025?
We are really excited about this upcoming season, and we have a theme, Celebrating Women in the West, that is going to be a thread that is pulled through our entire 2025 season. The thing that is really anchoring this is going to be an exhibition called Women in Wyoming. This is a project by Lindsay Linton Buck out of Jackson, Wyoming. And she's highlighting stories of contemporary women living in Wyoming. And just a great opportunity to tell the stories of individuals who are contributing to the landscape and the diversity of what it means to live in Wyoming as a female. And so this was really motivated us, though, to think about, let's, in a more broad way, celebrate women in the West. And so this season in 2025, there's going to be some other neat opportunities to do that. As we open our doors in February, we will be highlighting the work of Linda Pease, and she is going to be coming for our 20th anniversary illustrator show. Annually, we like to open the doors at the beginning of our season with some exhibitions that are engaging for a younger audience, and the illustrator show is a great opportunity for school groups to come in and talk to an illustrator, see about, you know, this form of art and what it might look like if you wanted to go down the path of becoming an artist yourself. You might choose illustration. And so we're really excited to bring Linda in as another woman in the West who's making an impact. I think that's going to be a really nice. And then we're looking to kind of close out the 2025 season, highlighting pieces in our own collection done by women artists. And so that's going to be a neat opportunity. I might toss it over to Jochen if you want to say any more, but for Jochen to become, to really dive into the collections too and look at that particular portion of the collection done by female artists.
I'm really excited to dig into that collection and to come up with a kind of curatorial mix, if you want. I think there's going to be many opportunities there for visitors to explore that theme.
It has been a delight to be here at the Britain Museum. We will have on our website more information about upcoming shows, ways to contact the museum, but thank you so much for taking time to share the Britain Museum.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Corby Skinner, Jennifer Corning, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Nauman. Hear this program anytime online at yprradio.org.